Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 209 of the Last Round Podcast. We were off last week, so we apologize for no episode, but we're back after a weekend of very, very exciting events, especially the main events from the DAZN broadcaster. They definitely delivered in terms of entertainment for a boxing fan this past Saturday. Let's jump right into it. Fight reviews this past Saturday, the 18th of February, from the Nottingham Arena in Nottingham on DAZN. Mauricio Lara, 26-2-1, gets the 7th round TKO stoppage over Lee Wood. Lara becomes the WBA featherweight champion of the world. So we knew this was going to be a crazy fight. Mostly because, I guess, I would put more weight on because of Lara's style, because he's a knockout artist. So I think that he forces his opponents to engage. And also Lee Wood, you know, he was, I don't know if it was his last fight or two fights ago, but it was one of the more recent fights where he beat Conlon in New York and knocked him out of the ring. That was a very, very exciting fight. So both of these guys had a ton of momentum. On the scorecards, after the TKO in the 7th round, I believe Wood was up on all three against Lara. But then Lara caught him. They were both in the middle of an exchange, and Lara just beat him to the punch with a left hook that sent him to the canvas. And then I believe that's when Ben Davison, Lee Wood's trainer, threw in the towel. And obviously visibly upset Lee Wood, who didn't seem to appreciate it at that time. But after sitting on it for a day or two, I think he tweeted out something saying that he understands and, you know, and all that. What did you think about this fight?
I thought it was a great fight. You know, going into it, like you said, I think everybody knew or hoped that it was going to be exactly what it was. I thought Lee Wood came out with a very good game plan early on, and I think he probably was winning on the scorecards. In my opinion, going into the 7th round, I thought he just dictated the fight so well, just with his jab. There's kind of like a leading jab the whole time, kind of like stopping, you know, Lara being able to do what he wanted to do. But, you know, Lara just, and the commentators said it as well, Lara just didn't look winded. You know, like you could see like Lee Wood, he was cut up and he was kind of like breathing a little bit heavy. I'm guessing that maybe it was just the mental side of it, and knowing that he had to be on it 100% of the time because of the knockout power that Lara has, that it kind of drained him a little bit, because there was no point during the fight you could really take any time off, because Lara just has those heavy hands. And if you take a little bit off and you're kind of resting or trying to gather your breath or whatever, he can catch you and take it out. And that's kind of what happened, in all honesty, because, you know, like Lee Wood was winning, Lara managed to catch him. And he got back down, got back up maybe a little bit too quick. And I thought the referee probably did do the right thing. He took his time, watched him, saw that he didn't have his feet. Lara had already ran and was pretty much right next to the referee, telling the referee to get out of the way so he could get in there and knock him out. And as we posted on our Twitter, you know, it's one of those age-old boxing questions. Do you go out on your shield, or does your corner save you to live and fight another day? Because, you know, he can fight Lara again in the rematch. He can go for the Conlon rematch. He can fight Josh Warrington. And the last thing we want is, you know, the final image of Lee Wood taking an open shot because, you know, he was buzzed if the referee let it continue. And then he stretched it out, you know, in his hometown in Nottingham. You know, imagine what sight that would have been.
I think from what I've seen some reports, I could be wrong, but I believe I've seen it, that there is a rematch clause probably on the Lee Wood side. I don't see why he wouldn't activate it, why he wouldn't take it. Couple months to recuperate, recover, and then get right back in there, try to get his belt back. I definitely see that. I wonder if it'll happen maybe in the United States, or would it still happen over there? I'm not sure. That's something that obviously news will, that will trickle out as the days and weeks come ahead. But Lara, and I believe he's only 24 years old. 24 years old, and he's already this dangerous and showing the world, like, hey, this is what I got. And, you know, it also helped that both of them are under the Matchroom Boxing and Eddie Hearn banner. So it's like, okay, let's put these two guys together. For Lara, and tell me how likely you think any of these guys are. So the other guys with titles at the moment at 126. Ray Vargas, he has a WBC strap. And then Luis Alberto Lopez has the IBF. Who has the WBO?
Just pulling up the rankings right now.
So anyways, while you're looking at that, all three of those fighters I just named are all from Mexico. Putting them together would be big, especially maybe in Texas, Southern California, Arizona, even in Mexico, obviously. But Vargas is with, at the moment, he's with PBC. Lopez, who is Lopez with? The IBF champ at 126.
Top Rank, I think.
Is he with Top Rank? So each one of these three major world title holders at the moment are each with one of the big three promoters. PBC, Top Rank, Matchroom. So, as we've seen 1,000 to 1,000,000 times before in the sport of boxing, I sound like Floyd Mayweather now. It's a slim chance, possibly, that we're going to see these matchups happen because they're all on different networks. They're all on with different promoters. Did you find who WBO champ was?
It was Navarrete, and then now it's going to be fought for on April the 1st between Robizi Ramirez and Isaac Dogbe.
Okay, so Top Rank card. Dogbe's Top Rank. Okay. Yeah. So as of right now, it's vacant, but it'll on April 1st, somebody will be that. And then I'm pretty sure with Luis Alberto Lopez having the IBF, whoever wins on April 1st, Top Rank is going to put those two together in a unification matchup. Lopez versus the winner of Dogbe and Ramirez. And then what? And then go after Lara or Vargas, try to make a fight with them. It gives Top Rank, I would assume it would give Top Rank the negotiation power by having a fighter who's a unified champion. Like, hey, no, our guy's a unified champ. So you have to come to us, to ESPN or something, you know. I mean, right? That's usually the pathway that these promoters take. So I'm assuming that's what happened. But going back on this actual fight between Lara and Wood, I think when we talked about this before, and I mentioned it to some people throughout the last couple of days, some other boxing fans and boxing personalities, if you will. I took, you know, I you want to call it the easy guess or the easy prediction? I picked Lara, and I picked him by knockout. Do you think that, was it surprising to you? Let me ask you that. Was it surprising to you that Lara actually caught him? Because, like we said, Wood was up on the scorecards up until the stoppage.
No. I think that Lara just has that very unique style. You know, you can saw that when he fought, you know, Warrington. He gets a lot of his opponents kind of like, they start to fumble because they don't really know what to do against him, because like he comes in, he kind of looks like he throws, he starts off like he throws like very slowly. He doesn't mind taking the odd shot to kind of see what you're going to do. And then slowly but surely as the rounds go on, he kind of like ups the rhythm a little bit and gets into the fight a little bit more. And that's why I thought you know, going into it, that, you know, Lara might take him out, you know, late on. So that's why I was kind of like, you know, pleasantly surprised, you know, when I saw that Lee Wood was kind of, you know, dictating it early on. And it kind of sounds strange to say that, because if you look at their faces, you know, in like the fifth and sixth round, like Lee Wood was actually the one that was kind of like battered and bruised, but he was still winning the rounds, surprisingly. But, you know, Lara just went in there and does what Lara does, I guess. You know, he doesn't mind being down on the cards. He has like a very similar, that kind of like, I don't know whether you would agree, like that's kind of like new Mexican style. Like you see like him, Canelo, and like Julio Cesar Martinez have this same sort of unorthodox, very confident, heavy-handed style where they don't mind losing rounds because they have enough confidence in their power that at some point they're going to catch you and they're going to take you out. And I'm not saying they're the same, just have like a similar, you know, parts of it, because people are going to be like, he fights nothing like Canelo, but, you know, very similar style. Yeah, so no, it wasn't a surprise to me. And going back to what you said about what's going to happen next, I think the good thing for Lee Wood is, one, he has the rematch, and two, I think that win, lose, or draw, if he goes in there again against Lara and Lara defeats him, he still has the Josh Warrington and Conlon fights on the table. And I'm sure people are going to shout, well, we don't want to see that. You know, if he's gone on two losses, you know, he may as well retire. We always say that as fans, but we always get drawn into it. Look at how many years we waited for Amir Khan and Kell Brook, and people were like, oh, I'm not going to watch that. 5, 6, 7, 8 years too late. We all do. We all buy into the hype. And then, you know, they have the arguments, the PR does what they do, and then come fight day, we always, for some reason, throw money at it and we'll all buy it. And I think it's probably the same for Lee Wood. I think he can afford to lose to Lara again, and he still has the Mick Conlon rematch, which, because the first fight was great, and, you know, a brand new fight against Josh Warrington. And I think, you know, so he's got a choice of three different paydays. It's just, you know, pick your poison. Which one do you want?
Lee Wood was visibly emotional too after the loss. So you can tell that he was feeling it. Like he just, I think it was more because of the stoppage. The towel was thrown in from his corner, and he felt that he could get up and keep going. So like you said, you know, we put out a tweet asking, like, you know, was it too early of a stoppage, or is it better for the trainer just throwing the towel? I you know, you're always going to have critics, like we know in boxing, but what if, for example, Davison never threw in the towel? Lee Wood keeps going. The referee says, all right, box. Lara knocks him out again and hurts him. You know, obviously that's the name of the game is boxing. You know, that's the name of the game. But, you know, how much more would the backlash from the boxing fan and the boxing universe and probably mainstream, because something like that, you know, it's a human interest story. How much worse would that backlash be if that happened? Instead of, like, what would you rather have? Would you rather have the backlash as a trainer that you throw in the towel and then you get criticized that you stopped it too early, you should have gave your fighter a chance, or that you let him, you don't throw in the towel and you let him go and then he gets knocked out, but then he gets hurt? I mean, pick your poison, right? Which one's worse?
Yeah, I mean, it's a hard decision, isn't it? Because if you look at, you know, a few months back, Derek Chisora against Tyson Fury, you know, Chisora was just taking a pound in round after round after round after round. And, you know, how many, you know, people in the media were saying like they should have, you know, thrown in the towel two or three rounds earlier, because, you know, Chisora wasn't going to knock him out. He was already, you know, pretty far behind on like the scorecards, you know, and we gave them shit for that. And you're now looking at this one, this kind of, people are kind of split. A lot of people were saying, you know, it was good. And then a lot of people were saying that, you know, like, they should really have let him, you know, carry on, because Lee Wood has the knockout power. You know, he only had to like really avoid him for something like 8 to 10 seconds. And then it's the end of the round. And then he has, you know, like a minute to recover, and he could have gone back out there for the eighth round. But, you know, the referee was the closest one there. You know, Ben Davidson knows Lee Wood better than we do. You know, he knows his powers of recovery, and he probably knew that Lee Wood was ahead on the scorecards. So just think what was going through his mind. He must have known, like, okay, Lee's in a bad, bad way right now because he's winning. He was the champion. He was winning on the scorecards. I'm sure he knew there was 8 to 10 seconds left. So he must have known there was something wrong because look at all those things that he kind of had in his favor, right? So he must have known there was something, you know, really bad going on with Lee for
it's
him.
Also, it's also like, I mean, you don't think in the back of Ben Davison's mind was that, okay, Lara's a knockout artist.
Mm.
And he knocked him out. Or he knocked, well, yeah, he's knocked him out essentially. But he knocked him down and it wasn't like a flash knockdown. It was a shot. He caught him. You don't think in the back of somebody like Ben Davison's mind is like, oh, man. He put him to the ground. If he gets up, like, he's already, you know, on wobbly legs and his equilibrium's out of whack. And you're facing a guy like Lara who's known to finish him. You know? Like, maybe he knew, like, okay, there's too much time. How much time was left in the round?
Depending on Twitter, it was like 8 to 10 seconds because I've saw people post different things. So around 10 seconds.
So let's just say around eight to 10 seconds. See, that also makes the whole situation a lot more crazy in terms of criticism. But I don't know, maybe Ben Davison thought about that. Maybe he thought, in that split second, he's like, oh, man, if I don't throw in the towel and let him up, there's a good chance that Lara ends it right now.
Yeah.
He ends it right now, and it's like, okay, I'd rather take the loss with me stopping the fight than having Lee Wood just get knocked out completely. Because it's true, you know, it wasn't like a flash knockdown where he's like, oh, he just went down and he gets back up like, oh, okay, I'm good. You know, there's a difference. It was in the middle of exchange, and then Lara's shot just connected faster and with more strength. And, you know, maybe Ben Davison, and I'm sure this has happened in the past with trainers and teams, you know, when they're the champion going in, and he knew like, okay, well, we have a rematch clause. Like, it's not that we're not going to get another shot, you know? So he's like, okay, we can still come back. You know, maybe that crosses his mind too. Who knows? There's always going to be criticisms, but whether it's 8 to 10 seconds or 20 seconds or whatever, if he was going to let him up and have him go at it for the remainder of that round against somebody with the power of Lara, it could have ended really, really badly, you know? I mean, just imagine that. But yes, it seems that there's going to be a rematch. Lee was going to exercise that right. I do wonder if it's going to be over there or over here in the United States. What would you put your money on?
Probably the UK, I'd imagine.
You think so?
Yeah, because Lara's probably got a decent kind of like following there, whether it's, you know, people that like him or people that hate him, because he's fought Josh Warrington twice over there.
Well, the whole Josh Warrington thing, they said that Lara spit on him after the fight, and then there was a kind of like a scuffle. Was that true?
Yeah, Lara admitted it interviews on ID Boxing and IFL TV.
That's nuts.
In the way that he kind of like answered the question, I think he thought there was nothing wrong with that. I know,
That's nuts, man. That's nuts.
Yeah, I mean,
I saw like a clip of it, and I thought Warrington was just kind of like, yeah. I thought they were just kind of talking smack to each other. I was like, oh, okay. But then I started seeing reports like, oh, no, it says that Lara spit on him. And now you're telling me that he actually admitted it in an interview. Like, oh, yeah, I did. I was like, what the hell is that?
I think he admitted it and just said something along the lines of, like, you know, there's still beef between them or something like that. So, yeah.
That's nuts. That's ridiculous. But, you know, that's boxing for you. It wasn't a good showing in regards to that behavior, but what are you supposed to do? But Lara, as we mentioned, is now the WBA featherweight champion of the world. And this is like the regular. Is this like secondary? Is this regular title or is this the full?
Now it's the full one, I believe. I think they actually eventually, after like 2 or 3 years, stripped Leo Santa Cruz. I think Matt Dream campaigned. And Lee Wood is now the actual WBA.
Yeah, which is great. I think it's funny though that WBA announced a couple years ago, like, oh, yeah, we're going to take them all away. But, I mean, you could tell which divisions and which fighters they were, like, taking their time with. Tank Davis, Leo Santa Cruz, you know that Al Heyman, PBC, or whoever had a lot of influence behind the scenes. They're like, hey, just focus on the other divisions first. Like, that's, you know, they were taking their time. They were taking their sweet time, you know. And would they have eliminated that secondary WBA title, which is pointless? Would they have eliminated that if Matt Trueman and Eddie Hearn didn't, you know, actively campaign against the WBA to do that, so they can have that world title on the line for here between Lara and Lee Wood, or have Lee Wood win the title, you know, because Tank Davis still has these secondary titles between 130 and 135. And then, you know, but as we know, broadcasters, TV broadcasters love marketing the fact that a fight is a world title fight. They won't put for the regular title. They won't put for a secondary title. They'll put world championship fight. You know, because then if there's a regular fan or a casual fan who switching between channels, or they see and they're like, oh, it's a world championship fight. Great. Little do they know, it's like these belts are just becoming ridiculous. And it's like secondary title, a regular title. You know, it's ridiculous.
IBO.
Well, at least the IBO only has like one title. You know, the WBA is the one that's kind of egregious, you know, but at least that featherweight, that's gone. But I don't know. Don't be surprised if it comes back at a later point. Like, oh, they bring some new one in, WBA gold or something like that. It's just like, what does that mean? Like, they're like, these are like toys now. It's like, come on. Like, you're devaluating the accomplishment because you're adding so many pieces to the puzzle. It's like you're devaluating the accomplishment. It's stupid with all these belts. It's ridiculous.
Gonna get that 3%, Danny boy. You've got to get that 3%.
Yeah, that's true. Always comes back to the dollar sign, doesn't it? Moving on that card, Dalton Smith remains undefeated at 14-0 with the unanimous decision win over 12 rounds against Billy Allington.
Mm-hmm.
This was for the British super lightweight title of the world. Smith gets the decision win by scores of 119-108 twice and 120-107. Do those scorecards accurately reflect the fight?
I think so. And in a weird way, I still don't think it was a good performance from Dalton Smith, even though he relatively won every single round. I thought he could have maybe have stepped it up and got him out of there. I don't know whether it's maybe just because Smith, you know, wanted a bigger fight, couldn't get himself up for this fight. I think we definitely need to see, you know, Dalton Smith probably move up, because it seems we've been talking about him as a, you know, good prospect for some time now. And I think, you know, we should get some bigger names, move him up, you know, as normal, Commonwealth, European, go in for some of those international fights and then on to the world level. Unless anything, you know, he gets a big chance between now and then, obviously take that. But I think he's one that's definitely been talking about, and it's someone that I know Matrim are building, because they kind of like to have, like, you know, a person in kind of like every region of the UK, so they could do shows all over, you know. So obviously, like the Smith brothers in Liverpool, you've now got Dalton Smith, you know, covering the Sheffield area. And then
they're not related, right?
No, to what, to the Callum Smith and stuff?
Yeah.
No. But, you know, Smith. Obviously we used to have, you know, like obviously the Ingle Gym out of Sheffield, and obviously you'd have all those fighters covering the Sheffield area, which is a good boxing city. And now they've got, you know, Dalton Smith. He can kind of cover that area for them if they wanted to put shows on over there. So I think it's time to step him up maybe a little bit quicker.
Yeah, he still has some time. I mean, yeah, you're right. But 14-0, I think Matt Trueman and Eddie Hearn are going to take their time with him a little bit, you know. Especially with 135 to 140 being so crowded with talent and big names, you know, we'll see how it works out for Dalton Smith. But I think Eddie Hearn and Matrim, like I said, are gonna bring him along the pathway here with patience. So that would be my guess. Also on the card, Gary Coley remains undefeated at 16-0 with a second round TKO over Wilfredo Flores. This was for the WBA Intercontinental Lightweight title. What do you think about Cooley's TKO?
Good performance. Another good performance from Gary Coley. Someone I think they're going to move relatively quickly. He's done it in the amateurs. He's now doing it in the pros. He's scheduled to return on the Taylor v. Serrano card, May 20th. And they're talking about maybe Maxi Hughes or Jorge Linares has been, you know, touted.
When was the last time Linares fought?
He's fought, I think it was towards the end of last year, like December and like October, two defeats over in Russia. So if they're going to pick Linares, unfortunately, it's going to be, you know, like kind of as cannon fodder. But
for the
he is known to the British public from obviously all those fights he's had, you know, against like Anthony Crawler and guys like that. Obviously the Lomachenko fight as well. So I think we touched on it before. And I'd rather not see someone as good as Linares go out like that, you know, losing to obscure fighters in Russia and then, you know, getting thrown to the wolves against someone like Gary Cully. But I don't know, maybe he needs the money or maybe he just can't give up the sport. You know, it seems to be addictive.
You talk about world traveler, like world champion fighter. Linares has literally fought all over the world.
Yeah, yeah.
He really has. He really has.
Started his, you know, career in Japan, USA, the UK, fought Venezuela. Yeah, he's obviously Russia, like we just touched on. But yeah, I just don't want to see him, you know, be one of those guys that we're still talking about. And he's just, you know, now fighting, you know, prospects and he's just getting his ass beat, you know, and getting knocked out and stuff like that. So because he's had a really good career.
You never know. What if he wins? He had a couple losses early in his career. People thought, oh, okay. And then look, he rebounded and made a pretty good career out of himself.
Yeah, because you see, he's not prone to, that's probably too strong a word, but, you know, when he does lose, sometimes he does lose early. You know, he gets knocked out, like when he fought Cano. There was another one early in his career, I can't remember against who. And Gary Cully's a big puncher. He's a big unit for that division. I know he spoke in an interview that he wants to be the first Irish three-weight world champion. And he probably could do that with the frame that he has. So he probably needs to try to get, you know, a world title relatively soon before, you know, he moves up to the higher weight division and tries to claim a second and third one.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. I mean, what about Maxi Hughes? Who's more likely? Is it Linares or Hughes? I think Linares would be, if he takes a fight, I think.
Well, Maxi Hughes, I think, would be easier to make.
But Linares doesn't really have any options either right now. So I feel like, I think you're right. Because of the name that he holds, you know, the resume, I think Matchroom would look at it like, oh, you know, let's, you know, let's get somebody like Cully with the win over Linares would be good on his resume. Like, oh, he defeated, you know, he defeated multiple time world champion and Ring Magazine world champion Jorge Linares, and blah, 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 who's been in the ring with the likes of so-and-so and so-and-so. You know, it helps the marketing, especially if Cully ends up being more than a domestic level fighter. You know, if he gets to world level, I mean, would you call him right now a domestic level fighter or world level?
You probably have to go more domestic, just looking at, like, you know, the resume so far.
Well, I think if, you know, obviously, you want your fighters to get to world level and, you know, get into to the United States territory and all that stuff. I think Jorge Linares, even if he is way past his prime, helps with the marketing behind that. Because if you come to the United States, Gary Cully finally fights in the United States, gets some matchups over here. They're going to be, if he fights Maxi Hughes and beats him, you know, the United States audience isn't going to know who Maxi Hughes is.
You know, no, I mean? It's an interesting one, because if you were Maxi Hughes with some of the fights that he's had, this is the time for him to really try to like cream as much money as he can. And obviously Maxi has the IBO world title, so he can kind of use that, like we were touching about, you know, like for PR issues and stuff like that. And, you know, is fighting somebody like a Gary Cully going to be like his biggest purse, you know, after coming off, you know, good wins against like Ryan Walsh and Kid Galahad? You think that he'd want to just fight a big name either in the UK or over here and make as much money as he can, because this is, you know, this is his time, this is his moment, whereas Linares may take a smaller purse, pretty much selling his name as an ex-world champion for, you know, resume reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we'll see. 16-0, obviously he's still progressing very well, being undefeated and all that. And I'm sure Matt Tremetti Hearn are pleased with his performance so far. But let's see, you know, it becomes a real test when you get to that level and you start really upping the competition. That's when the public really starts to notice who you are. And then that's when your promoter really knows, like, okay, you can cut it. You can cut it here. So moving on. Also this past Saturday from the Fox Theater in Pomona, California, which is in Los Angeles County, about, I would say, 30 miles or so from downtown Los Angeles, to the east of downtown Los Angeles, on DAZN, another DAZN card. So it was a DAZN card in the afternoon, at least over here in the United States, in the UK, between Lara and Lee Wood. And then in the evening time here in the California time in the United States, you had another DAZN card. So DAZN was busy on a global scale this past Saturday. Luis Neri gets the 11th round KO stoppage, knockout pretty much, over Azat Crazy 8. Is it Crazy 8?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Hovhannisyan, who takes the 4th loss of his career. I was there covering for the podcast. If you look through our Twitter and all that stuff, I was posting all night about it, pictures and stuff like that. This was exactly what we expected. Like I said, like I said before, just before we started recording today, both events, primarily the main events of the DAZN cards this past Saturday, were, as a boxing fan, even as a casual fan, if you caught them, were entertaining as hell. We expected fights and we got fights. And we know being, you know, longtime boxing fans, especially the lower weight classes, because they're, you know, they weigh less. Their speed is a lot more. There's a lot more punches thrown. So that's what happened with these two matchups in the UK and over here in California. This, I mean, I don't know how it came across on TV. I haven't watched it back on TV because I was there live, but they were going back and forth from my vantage point inside the arena at the Fox Theater in Pomona. And it got to the 10th round, and I was telling other media members next to me, I was like, man, I was like, this might actually go 12 rounds. I was like, I can't believe this is going to go 12 rounds. Because at the beginning, I thought, okay, this is going to end. I thought it was going to end by the 6th, but it didn't. And as soon as it got to the 10th, I was like, wow, okay, we're going into the championship rounds, but there's a good chance that it might enter the 12th round and go to a decision. I was like, man, I mean, it would have been a great fight regardless, but Neri, it was also kind of in the middle of an exchange in a way. Neri catches Hovhannisyan with a left hook. They're just both standing facing each other, and Neri just kind of throws a left hook and catches him. And the punishment that Hovhannisyan was already taking throughout those 11 rounds, he took that shot and he just kind of, his equilibrium went out of whack, lost his balance and just kind of, and then I believe that's when referee Ray Corona of the California State Athletic Commission, that's when he jumped in and stopped the fight. It was a great fight. And I can honestly see a rematch in the future. I don't know about next. Maybe next. I don't know. Golden Boy putting this fight together was good. But they, you know, I mean, I appreciated it as a boxing fan and, you know, as a media member. This was a great, you know, boxing for the boxing fan. Entertaining. Everything that boxing has to offer, it showed in that main event. What do you think about the fight?
Fast and furious, I think, is probably one of the best ways to describe it. You know, going into it, I think we knew and hoped it was going to be that. Just and it paid off. You could just see, you know, early on that Neri still has something left in the tank. Hovhannisyan just did what he always does, comes to fight. He's always a good TV fighter. And it's just going to be interesting to see where Luis Neri goes from there, because he's had a lot of ups, but he's had a lot of downs as well. Obviously getting banned from fighting in Japan for missing weight a few times, little drug bust when he was in the camp with Canelo. But, you know, it's a red hot division, you know, Stephen Fulton, Casemiro, MJ. Yes, yeah, the
monster.
Yeah, I mean, the monster's obviously, yeah, I'm sure we're going to touch on that. Obviously, you spoke to him afterwards, and yeah, he called out the monster, and I'm pretty sure every single boxing fan on the planet wants to see that.
But the monster has to take care of Fulton first and go get through that obstacle, which that's going to be a tough fight. But like you said, for Nery, you know, he has a lot of baggage, obviously, coming in, but came back, got this big win. And then Hovhannissian, at the first maybe three or four rounds, he got cut, I believe, just under the right eye on his cheek. At first, I thought it was from a headbutt, but then I believe it was from punches. I think it was from a punch from Nery. And you can see as the rounds progressed, obviously, that Nery was trying to attack that area because it started to swell up a little bit more. It got to a point where I believe referee Ray Corona took Hovhannissian to the corner to be examined by the doctor. But then the doctor, you know, he let it continue. But, you know, like I said, Hovhannissian had his moments too. Even though he lost the fight, he had his moments. He gave a great account of himself in this fight. He just came up on the losing end. And the atmosphere, because it was like a theater that's called the Fox Theater. So it's meant for like shows and concerts and stuff. It's like that. But, you know, sometimes those small venues like that, because it's kind of so intimate, are some of the funnest boxing events that you can be at. You know, instead of going to like a Staples Center where it's like 15 to 18,000 or something, you know, they're still fun. But I think we've been to enough of these small venue shows like that, and we've seen fun fights where it's so intimate that it really enhances the atmosphere of the entire event. And that's exactly what happened, especially in the main event. And it both fighters, Nery and Hovhannissian, it was almost kind of split down the middle in terms of fans, because at one point Nery's fans would chant his name, Nery, and then right after Hovhannissian his fans would jump in and chant Azat. They were going back and forth, so it wasn't just the fighters in the ring going against each other; it was their fans going back and forth. It was almost kind of like a pro wrestling event, you know, a pro wrestling, like the fan interaction and participation with the performers is always encouraged, and, you know, helps the event and the atmosphere. It was just kind of like that, you know, both, cause I think, Azat Hovhannissian is he Armenian?
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Right. I think he's Armenian. There's a big Armenian population in Southern California, especially in the LA area. So he had a lot of fans there. Lomachenko was there too. Lomachenko with some of his team members. His dad was there. He showed up. I'm not sure if his manager, Igis Klimas, or something, they might have had a fighter on the card, or I can't remember. But Lomachenko could have been there just to catch the great main event. But he was there in attendance. Yeah, it was a great fight, though. It was a great event. The matchmaking that Golden Boy put on between these two fighters at 122 pounds. This was an eliminator for the WBC junior featherweight or super bantamweight world title, which is held by Stephen Fulton, right? So now the winner, which is Nery, should be in line. Obviously, there's always politics, even when you fight an eliminator. You know, sometimes they put you like, oh, you have to fight another eliminator. And then another eliminator is like, what are you talking about? I thought, what's just one eliminator? So right now, Nery is positioned himself after this fight to fight the winner of Stephen Fulton and the monster Inoue, who will be fighting. Has that fight been officially announced?
I don't think. Yet. Let me just check BoxRec, but I'm pretty sure there isn't an actual date.
There isn't an actual announcement yet, right? There's just been like reports saying that Fulton is willing to go to Japan and this and that. Like, so I mean, we'll see. We'll see how that works. But it is a top rank that, you know, the monster in a way is under the top rank banner in the United States, at least. Stephen Fulton's under the PBC banner. Obviously, we know how promotional politics and broadcasters work. you know, which is unfortunate because this would be a great fight. But the winner of that fight would, expectedly, you would think, have to fight Nery, which I don't think happens next. I think Nery still has to fight maybe one or two more fights in between before he gets that WBC title shot. But as you touched on at the beginning of this conversation, Nery, the media talked to him after his fight. The fans already cleared out, and he came to the media section and started talking to us. So we all kind of swarmed. It was like a media scrum. People were asking him questions about different things, about what he thought about the fight, all that. And then one of our media colleagues brought up the monster in a way. And then Nery said that he wants the monster. You know, he wants to fight him. But then he also said that he said, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't know if I'm saying it accurately, but Nery said something along the lines of, in a way, is not a monster. He's a little monster. He said it in Spanish, but he said he's a little monster and I want to take his mask off, which I thought was a crazy quote. I was like, that's a great quote. Like, you know, if you want to kind of rile up the boxing fan and put some, you know, some marketing behind this type of beef that you have between these two fighters now, I thought it was a great way to start it. That video of him saying that is on our Twitter account right now. I got video of that when he said that, so it's posted on our Twitter account if you go check it out. And then he also, Nery had come out and talked to the media, and you can tell his arm, I believe his left arm was hurt. He had some bruises on there, and he had an ice pack on there, so I assumed, okay, I wonder what happened to his arm. So I asked him about his arm as well, but he just said that it was just sore and it was tired, pretty much kind of eliminating any kind of issue, like it was broken or just kind of really bad. He just said it was just sore. So according to him, he's fine. It was just general soreness, maybe because he was throwing on the eye, maybe because he got hit in the arm and the body and all that stuff. But Nery, you know, Nery, he wants to smoke, you know, he wants to smoke, and he made it known. He made it known saying, I want Inoue, you know? I mean, is that sentiment going to stay the same if Fulton beats Inoue, if that fight happens? If that fight doesn't happen, how likely do you think that Golden Boy puts Nery against Inoue? Do you think they work with Top Rank? I mean, you would think Nery would have to send... Or you would think Golden Boy would have to send Nery to Japan, right? But isn't he banned from Japan?
Right. That's the problem, I guess. I know that Top Rank had been trying for the longest time to get Inoue to fight over here more. You know, he was scheduled to fight in Vegas when COVID hit.
Right.
Pardon me. I mean, it's a great fight either way. Inoue or, you know, Fulton. I think Neri's probably going to hopefully fight any of them. You know, when he's professional and he's making weight, you know, he's a very, very good fighter. He's a fan pleasing fighter, you know, 34 wins, 26 by knockout. What more do you want as fans?
Right. Exactly. So, I mean, we'll see how it goes, but I think Nery doesn't end up fighting Inoue or Fulton next or even this year. I don't think that those fights happen this year. How likely do you think it is that Golden Boy makes a rematch of this Hovhannissian and Nery before the end of this year? How likely do you think that is?
I think Nery will want to move on and fight something bigger, but I'm all for that.
But no, you're right. But who, realistically, who could he fight
before the end of the year?
Well, he is with Zamfir. So unless they have a long-term deal with Golden Boy, because, like I said, Nery has his sub contract with Zamfir, but then they contracted with Golden Boy Promotions. So unless this is a multi-fight deal, if it's like if this was a one-fight deal, which it probably isn't, then Nery still has to fight exercise fights under the Golden Boy banner. But if he doesn't, if it was a one-fight deal, then he has options to go to any other promoter. Major promoter.
It's a hard one, isn't it, really? Because there's nobody really with Golden Boy at that weight division if they have options on him.
They used to have Ronnie Rios, but we've heard in you know from rumblings that he's retired, right?
Yeah, when I spoke to him, yeah, Ronnie told me that he's retired. I tell you another one that would have been good for the local area would have been a good fight, but he's also retired. Danny Roman.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Thompson Boxing. By the way, real quick, want to give our condolences to the Thompson Boxing family. Ken Thompson, the founder of Thompson Boxing, passed away within the last week or two. So condolences from the team here at the Last Round to the Thompson family and everybody at Thompson's Boxing, because that guy was definitely, at least on the West Coast over here, he was definitely the king of club shows, regional shows. You know, there's a lot of fights he put on that were very exciting. He had guys like Timothy Bradley, who went on to become a multiple-time world champion and, made a big account of himself. So, he was definitely a boxing fan. You can never deny that. So condolences to Ken Thompson's family and his entire team over there at Thompson's Boxing. But you're right, Danny Roman, he's retired. And that's the thing. It's the options are limited, you know? I mean, who does Matchroom have at 122? Is that it?
Yeah, I think he's the main one over there. I can't think of anyone else that jumps off the page. I mean, a lot of them are like Casemiro, Marlon Tapaz, but a lot of those guys, they're not with Matchroom or Golden Boy, so it's kind of like stuck, isn't he? Like on where he can go without crossing the street. A lot of them are taken up by PBC. Zalani Tete would be a good fight. He's heavy-handed, similar style to Neri. That'd be all action as well. But does he really want to go through another all action fight before getting a shot at either Fulton or MJ? You probably want a little. Either a rest or a little walkover, not something that's going to, take a little bit more out of the tank.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Either way, the event was great. The main event definitely delivered, like I said, the atmosphere. I think this was the first ever fight, at least from what I know. There could have been smaller promoters or smaller regional shows there, which we're just not aware of. But from our understanding, this was the first ever boxing fight at Fox Theater in Pomona, California, which is within the Los Angeles County boundary. And it was fun. It was a fun atmosphere. The fans were split down the middle. It was a definition of a boxing fight event. Like if you had somebody who was like a casual fan, you take them to that, I think they would have had fun, especially for that main event. It was definitely a great fight. So Oscar De La Hoya was there in the crowd too, with his best friend Mario Lopez, and De La Hoya was. I think there was a video posted of him where he's like standing up and kind of yelling during the main event, just like throwing shadow punches, and he's like, "Yeah, just really, really into it." So, he was really, really into it. So Shane Mosley was there because his kid, which we'll touch on in a second, but it was a fun fight, fun event, and also another tweet that we had posted. During yesterday or during this past Saturday's timeline in Pomona. So when you walk into that theater, there's posters on the behind glass leading up to the entrance of the theater. And usually they put like announcements for which shows are coming up, which artists, all of them, each one of those was a fight poster. So it was like De La Hoya fights, Shane Mosley fights, Bernard Hopkins. They were all old fight posters. There was a De La Hoya Fernando Vargas one. And it was really cool because every single one, there was probably, maybe 10 to 12, posters behind these glass, these pieces of glass. And they were all fight posters. And I thought it was really cool. So there's pictures on our Twitter account. If you scroll through our Twitter account, you can check that out. I thought that was a really cool, nice little touch. You're walking by and you see all those fight posters on the wall right there. That was really cool. So I got to give credit to Golden Boy and their team over there. That was a nice little tidbit to add to the event there. Moving on, Shane Mosley Jr. gets the 10-round unanimous decision win over Mario Alberto Lozano, who takes the 11th loss of his career. I don't know how it came across on TV, but I believe Mosley Jr. won by really wide scores on all three scorecards. Being there in person, I don't agree with that. I don't think those scores are that wide. I think Lozano actually took some rounds and was giving Mosley Jr. some problems. Lozano gave a good account of himself and he fought hard. But there was even one of the media members had asked me as we were getting towards the end of the 12th round. He was like, "Oh, who do you think's going to take it?" I was like, "Oh, well, Shane Mosley Jr. is from Pomona, California. You know, his dad's from Pomona. He grew, you know, I don't know how much he grew up in Pomona and stuff. I don't think they actually live there still, but he was billed from Pomona, California, like his dad, who was in attendance as, you know, right there on ringside. But, you know, Mosley Jr. is the bigger name marketing wise, you know, that Golden Boy can work with, more financially viable, if you look at it like that. So I told one of my media colleagues, like, "Oh yeah, I think Mosley Jr. is going to get the nod here regardless." And that's exactly what happened. I didn't think it was, the scores should have been that wide, but you know, it was a tough fight, but I do agree that maybe Mosley Jr. did deserve the decision. Just by not that wide of a score. But Lozano, like I said, he could fight. He could fight, and he was giving Mosley Jr. problems, and this was Mosley's first fight since beating Gabe Rosado last year. So it was maybe about 9-10 months since that fight. And I think he beat Rosado by decision as well, right?
Yeah, majority decision, yeah.
Yeah, so that was a majority decision. So this was a unanimous decision. So... yeah, but I think Lozano gave a good account of himself. I mean, you can tell just by his record, 33-11 as of the end of Saturday. You can tell he's one of those guys, like, he's thrown in there because he can fight and he can give you, like, a good test. I mean, having, what, over almost 45 fights, close to 50 fights, the guy can fight, you know? I could see him maybe being kind of like a... like a Gabe Rosado. Like a Gabe Rosado has like 15 losses, but he's been in there with the biggest names in boxing between 154 and like 175 or 168 or whatever. He's been in with those, with the biggest names. And I think Lozano, you know, I haven't looked at his past resume, but Lozano could probably do the same thing. 33-11, the guy can fight, you know? So you put him in there with whoever opponent you have, like, he'll give you a run for your money. He'll make you work for it, and that's exactly what he did to Mosley Jr. He made him work for the win. So I thought that was an exciting fight too. And then people were, you know, obviously behind Mosley Jr. from Pomona, the local crowd. And then it was funny because his grandfather, who's Sugar Shane Mosley's dad? What's his dad's name? Let's just call him Mr. Mosley.
Yeah,
he was there, and it was funny because like he was just kind of filming the whole time, like filming his grandson, like, "Oh yeah." And then right before like the fight started, he was trying to get his attention. Say, "Hey, look, Shane, look at me." And then like he kind of posed for his dad in the camera, and he like took a picture. It was just funny just to see like grandpa taking pictures of his grandson. I thought it was kind of cool. But like I said, Mosley Jr. gets the unanimous decision win over 10 rounds. Where does he go from here? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a difficult one because, you know, every time he steps up, you know, he doesn't look too great. I'm assuming they'll probably try to throw him in there with somebody for like a payday for him, you know, because he is highly ranked. So does he go in there with somebody like, I don't know, could he be the opening fight for Edgar Belanga on that Matchroom contract?
You know what, pretty interesting. That's a pretty interesting suggestion right there. I didn't think about that.
You know, I could see him in there with somebody like that. You know, it's probably be a good payday for him. Get it over in New York, Puerto Rican fans. You know, he's just signed with Matchroom there, obviously trying to place him in a couple of fights, get a few good wins for Belanga, and then eventually, you know, Belanga's going to have that big, you know, Mexican, Puerto Rican rivalry with Canelo, which they've pretty much openly spoken about that's the path.
Do you think, kind of sidetracking here, because Berlanga's kind of in the same, but they are in the same weight class here as Mosley Jr. And, you know, Berlanga leaving Top Rank and signing with Matchroom Eddie Hearn, which was news that broke last week. He also met with Golden Boy, Oscar De La Hoya, and Eric Gomez as well. Do you think he met with PBC?
Yeah, I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I think he said he did an interview with was it IFL TV or something like that. And I think, was it Al Heyman was the first one to call him?
Oh, is that what he said?
Or Oscar? I honestly can't remember now. I probably shouldn't have brought it up. Anyway, but I think he spoke to pretty much everyone. And then,
I think
back to was Canelo.
Yeah. Because I think if Golden Boy still had Canelo, I think Berlanga probably would have signed with Golden Boy. But I think, you know, Eddie Hearn's obviously a good talker, good salesman. You know, but they have a relationship with Canelo, a partnership with Canelo. So Berlanga wants that fight, even if he's not going to get it like right away. He knows, like, okay, I want that fight. And if I'm with Eddie Hearn in Matchroom, that's the best chance to get that fight. It is. So, I mean, I knew when, because Berlanga tweeted pictures of him with Eddie Hearn and him with Oscar De La Hoya and Eric Gomez after he met with them back-to-back days. I mean, I saw it. I knew right away. I was like, if he doesn't pick Eddie Hearn, like, I'd be ridiculously surprised.
Mm.
Like, he has Canelo, and he's been talking about Canelo for years. So, yeah, he's not going to get him anytime soon, but if anything, it's like next year, but he would have to at least fight twice this year and, you know, get some decent wins. But yeah, let's see how that shapes up. Let's see how that shapes up with Edgar Berlanga and how he does under Eddie Hearn in Matchroom. Because if Top Rank, you know, couldn't work out a deal with him and it didn't work out, at Top Rank kind of just like, okay, well, you know, you can become a free agent and figure it out. Yeah, Top Rank's professional, like, they got a good system going over there, and if they kind of, you know, couldn't give you something that made you happy, you know, what does that mean? Does that mean that they didn't really have too much confidence in your skill? Or there was also reports that or there was talk that Berlanga was rejecting opponents that Top Rank was giving him, like trying to step him up more, but Berlanga was rejecting those opponents. So I don't know. Is that going to happen with Eddie Hearn? Eddie Hearn's going to obviously put him in a fight first to something he could win, to introduce him to the DAZN crowd and all that, like to kind of get him going, which honestly shouldn't happen, but that's what's going to happen. And then what? After that first win, a big, you know, significant name, another test? Or is Eddie Hearn and Matchroom going to try to give him 2 to 3 fights where, you know, guys he could beat to kind of get his confidence up and introduce him to the DAZN crowd? What do you think?
I mean, I think they'll stick him in with carefully selected names that are coming towards the end of their career. But, you know, you can have them as like former world champion, something like that. People that aren't, you know, movers, because we can see even in some of the fights that he's had now that people that can box a bit and move a little bit, you know, Edgar Berlanga's not too good with it. He likes opponents just to stay in front of him. So I think he'll probably fight 2, maybe 3, you know, faded ex-world champions, and, you know, so he can get some wins. And then obviously they're building him up for that big Canelo fight, I would imagine next May or next September. You know, the two Mexican holidays, big Mexico-Puerto Rican rivalry, big payday for him. And then I imagine Berlanga will probably sail off into the sunset.
Maybe. That's, yeah. I mean, the kid does have like especially in New York, he does kind of have like a following. And then he, you know, I think he has that rapper Fat Joe who's also behind him. So he does have some type of following, which, you know, you can work with from a financial standpoint. But let's see how it works out. Let's see how it works out. Because, I mean, if he wins and then Eddie Hearn and Matchroom put him in with like significant names and he passes those tests and he keeps going and eventually gets himself to a Canelo fight, let's just say at the end of next year, depending on his pathway, That'd be exciting. That'd be exciting for the sport. Puerto Rico against Mexico. I mean, it'd be exciting, right? Canelo's kind of running out of opponents.
I could see. I'll name three opponents, and they probably won't be these guys, but this is the sort of people I'm thinking. Jose Uzcategui, ex-IBF world champion who lost it to Caleb Plant. Doesn't really move. Big, stiff, heavy-handed. Sergio Martinez is highly ranked by the WBA. And somebody else that's still boxing, and he boxed just recently, that's still boxing at middleweight, is a former world champion, Felix Sturm.
Huh, yeah, I guess. That could work. I don't think the Martinez one would happen. I don't think Eddie Hearn and Matchroom would make that fight. I think just Martinez is too, he's too old.
Felix Sturm actually won this weekend. He won by unanimous decision.
Maybe. I mean, Berlanga needs to get out there as soon as he can now. Now that he's announced his signing and Matchroom's announced it and all that, DAZN's announced it, they need to get him out as quickly as possible, like within the next 3 to 4 months, like 3 months. They need to put him out there. Get him going on his contract, on the DAZN platform. Get him going and start, you know, get the path going. You know, why wait? Why wait? You got to keep going. But I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. Rounding off the card in Pomona, California, the Golden Boy on Golden Boy fights on DAZN. Ricardo Sandoval gets the 21st win of his career over a second round K with the second round KO over Gerson Ortiz. That's how you say it in Spanish. Gerson Ortiz. Sandoval, he talked to a couple reporters on the side after the fight, saying that he, you know, he's, I think there was a quote that we saw where he said he's ready for like bigger names and stuff. I mean, 21-2, he's kind of within that category now, right? Over 20 wins, maybe.
Well, we just saw him. We were both there when he lost to David Jimenez.
Well, that's true. Yeah, that's true. So
does this one win right that wrong? Was that just a wrong opponent, wrong night, bad night at work? You know, because that one loss was because he was, you know, he was highly ranked in pretty much all of them, I believe, the IBF, WBA. He was the mandatory to fight Sonny Edwards. But for some reason, they decided not to go down that route. And I think they were going to go down the WBA after talking to his manager one time. So, yeah, that loss was kind of a setback. But hopefully, you know, this kind of rights that wrong. And he's back up there because, you know,
he performed well. It was a good KO. It was good. It was early night, and I thought it was a great punch, like, you know, back in the win column. So, I mean, we'll see. But he's still a young kid. He's got some time to recover from those two losses he has in his professional career. And then also a side note, he came out to a live mariachi, a live mariachi band who was like, they were on the second level of the theater, and they played him out. And then when he won, they played again. It was funny. Like it was cool to see, but it was also funny because when Sandoval was doing his post fight interview in the ring with Beto Duran, the mariachi started playing again in the middle of the interview, and then there was a DAZN like crew member who got like a flashlight and was trying to shine it at them from below to get them to stop, and you could tell that they saw him, but they kept playing. And they just kept playing until they finished. But the DAZN crew was trying to like wave them, like, hey, you need to stop. They're doing an interview. Because it was in the middle of the post-fight interview that Sandoval was giving in the ring after his KO win. So I thought it was funny, but I was just like, well, why would you let you know, a mariachi come in and put them on the top like that? I mean, I know there was like limited space, I understand that, but it's just I thought it was really, really funny that they did that. So, but it was a nice little humorous moment that I appreciated. All right, moving on. Fight preview this upcoming Saturday, the 25th of February, from the Armory in Minneapolis, Minnesota, on Showtime for the IBF super lightweight title. Subriel Matias, 18-1, goes up against Jeremiah Sponce, 30-0, undefeated. What do you think about this fight? Seems like it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it's some real Matias fucking power in those hands.
Yeah.
I think it's a 94% KO ratio. All of his wins, I believe, have come by knockout. Ponce, I think it's, what was it, 30 wins, 20 by knockout. So still a fair few knockouts on his ledger as well. Great fight. The IBF obviously was vacated, so because they didn't want to fight Mattis. So if you're going to put a gun to my head, tell me that I'm a betting man and tell me where the money goes, I think, you know, Subriel Mattis is a good shout. Just that power in his hands.
It's a good matchup, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a good fight. It's just one of those ones where it's not got the biggest names, so I don't know if he'll get that many views.
I mean, that, you know, that happens, but you know, from a competitive standpoint, at least from our point of view as hardcore boxing fans, it's a pretty good matchup.
Yeah, on Showtime for those people that want to follow it.
PBC card, right?
Yeah, PBC card on Showtime for as many PBC cards as we've got left, I guess.
Yeah, allegedly. We'll see. Also on the card, Elvis Rodriguez, 13-1-1, goes up against Joseph Adorno, 17-1-2. So shout out to Minnesota getting these fights and PBC bringing fights over there, because I don't see any other promoter taking fights over there. I think Top Rank might have had some fights there, maybe a limited amount of times, but it's more PBC bringing fights there. So maybe that venue fee, that site fee, is pretty cheap over there in Minneapolis.
It must be, right?
That's a random area to have fights in.
Yeah.
But I've heard that, you know, they get a good crowd every single time. You know, it's a pretty decent crowd. So, but it has to be worth it business wise. Site fee must be cheap or something. You know, who knows? Also, this upcoming Sunday, the 26th of February, finally, at least as of now, as of this recording, it seems like it's happening. From Saudi Arabia, Jake Paul, your favorite fighter and mine, and our listeners, goes up against Tommy Fury. These guys have been talking major smack about each other for the past like 2 years or so. They tried to make the fight multiple times in the past, and then allegedly Fury, you know, pulled out of some negotiations and fights, and then maybe the Probellum Kinahan stuff allegedly affected him and how he does business and travel and all that stuff. Too, because of, you know, the Fury name and all that. So, you know, who knows? But now this fight is happening. Saudi Arabia was probably the only location that it could have happened. I think Jake Paul wanted this fight to happen probably in the UK. But I guess it didn't work out. But I'm sure Saudi Arabia is paying a lot of money for this. What do you think here? What do you think?
I keep going back and forth.
I just can't see how Tommy Fury loses. He's an actual fighter. Whether people say like, oh, he's not the same. He's been fighting a lot longer. And I know he's like, you know, also on TV over there in the UK and reality shows and stuff like that. But he's an actual fighter who's trained for years and fought. Like if he really loses, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. Jake Paul's been fighting. Most of these fights, his 6-0 fights have been against MMA guys or basketball players or whoever, you know. Tommy Fury, you know, even if he loses, people should still look at it like he's a professional fighter, a professional boxer coming from a fighting family.
But look at what he's done in the boxing world so far. Like, is he going to become a world champion? No, probably not after what we've seen in the 8 fights so far. And I do wonder, is he just selling his boxing career?
Could be.
For a world championship purse? Because he makes most of his money, I imagine, from doing, you know, all the reality TV stuff, probably social media, whatever he's on in the UK, I'm not too sure. But he's going to be getting a world championship purse, or maybe even higher than a world championship purse, to fight someone like Jake Paul. If you're looking at the ledgers so far of who they've actually fought, you know, Jake Paul fought Anderson Silva. Anderson Silva beat Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., you know, which is a great win, which is, you know, better than anything that Tommy Fury's done so far. And if you look at what Tommy's done, he hasn't looked great in, you know, a lot of his fights. But then you listen to some people that know him and have been in the gym and have seen him fight, and they've said, like, you know, like, he is a good fighter. You know, he has beaten a lot of pros and, you know, inspiring, knocked out a few like well-known pros that people have spoken about. So I don't know. It's honestly hard to pick, because you don't know. Is Tommy Fury just going there for a payday? Like, how serious does he take it? His dad said before that he was supposed to fight, but he was out there with his brother, like, you know, on a yacht, eating, drinking, and not taking it seriously.
I think it's fight if Tommy Fury wins, which I just don't see how he doesn't. Like, he just has too much credibility behind him, even though people are like, oh no, he's not a real boxer. Like, he is. Like, he's from a fighting family. I know he's like a TV star, but I'm giving him the credit. So if he loses, it's embarrassing. But how much, look at it this way. Ever since his name has been associated with Jake Paul, Tommy Fury's name has been a lot more globally recognized than it was before Jake Paul started talking about it. Because Jake Paul is global. Because there's a lot of people, even random people, who have asked me, like, oh, what's the deal with that Jake Paul Fury fight? And I'm always surprised, because then they're just, they're like, they know, like, oh, he's that kid, right? It's Tyson Fury's brother or something. Like, you know, like, they ask about it. But it's because of Jake Paul. Like, he's a global star. So he mentions his name, and then people, his fans or people are like, oh, who's this Fury guy? Like, is he talking about Tyson Fury? And then they look it up, and they're like, oh, it's this Tommy. Oh, he has a brother? You know? This is, and if Tommy Fury wins, which I believe he should, I don't see why not. It's only going to help him in his career in terms of publicity and all that stuff, because he's already gotten the rub from Jake Paul for the publicity. His name has become a lot more recognizable all over the world. And if he beats him, now it's like, oh yeah, you're the guy that beat Jake Paul. Business-wise, financial-wise, man, if he... All right, you got to think about all that. You really got to think about all that. You know? It's like... I don't know. It's a weird situation. But it's just funny to talk about Jake Paul after, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we were like, what the heck is this guy? Oh, he's just doing YouTube fighting. And Jake Paul's actually going through with it. You know, got to give him the credit. So we will see. Also on the card, in the co-main event for the WBC Cruiserweight title, Iyanga Makabu, who was at one time rumored to, as a potential opponent for Canelo, Eddie Reynoso requested at the WBC convention, all that stuff. It never happened. Goes up against Badu Jack. This is in the co-main event. This could be a little exciting fight too. Badu Jack's always, you know, involved in these fights in the Middle East, isn't he? Like, his relationship with, like, the people out there and the, you know, the governments and the crowd and everything, they must really like him, because Badu Jack is always involved in these fights. He always gets, like, even when he was with Mayweather, Mayweather would always put Badu Jack high up on the card as a co-main or something. Like, Badu Jack must be a really likable person because he's always involved in these big events. He's always there. So I think Makabu knocks him out, though. What do you think?
It's an interesting one because... You know, Badu Jack obviously started his career at light heavyweight. He's moving up. This will obviously make him the, you know, two-time world champion if he manages to beat him. I don't know. Makabu is just kind of like strong. He'd obviously, you know, he lost to Tony Bellew, and then his only other loss was actually on his debut. So, you know, he's pretty much, you know, had one defeat in like, you know, 30 fights. It's a hard... Yeah, I could see Makabu maybe taking it, you know, maybe catches him, you know, knocks him out because, you know, Badu Jack is, you know, hittable, and he's kind of really been fighting a lot, you know, lower pedigree of opponents over the last few years. I think you go back to like 2019 was when he fought, you know, Jean Pascal. You know, ever since then, he's been fighting, I don't know, club level type fighters, stuff like that, on these, you know, Triller cards, Dubai cards, YouTuber cards, stuff like that. He just manages to kind of like get on those cards somehow. He has the best manager in the business, I would say. So, yeah, yeah. I mean, if you told me to put a bet on it, yeah, I think Makabu, if he still wants it, because, you know, how old is he? He's must been around for like forever, it seems.
Seems like it. Yeah. By the way, it's an intriguing matchup. You know, I'm kind of like interested. Like, I'll check it out, see how it ends up, how it concludes. But we will see. News and notes section of this week's episode of The Last Round. Something we've been beating the drum here, and, you know, I'll kind of briefly touch on it. ESPN has reported that Davis, Gervonta Davis, and Ryan Garcia's teams have both signed contracts for an April 15th bout in Las Vegas at 136-pound catch weight fight. But there is still no contract signed between Showtime and DAZN. Showtime is obviously on Gervonta Davis's side and PBC's longtime network partner. Supposedly, they sent a contract to DAZN this past weekend. And DAZN is obviously the home of Ryan Garcia and Golden Boy Promotions. So I don't want to really dive too much into this because it's kind of like going back and forth. And then it was also announced recently that Davis pled guilty. I think struck some type of plea deal or something happened in his criminal trial. I think it's over there in Baltimore. And he's scheduled to be sentenced at the beginning of May. So does that give Golden Boy Promotions a little bit more leverage? Because they maybe Gervonta Davis and PBC and Showtime want to try to make this fight just before he gets sentenced, just in case he does jail time, which it's highly likely that he could. You know, it's kind of like how Floyd Mayweather, I think when he, just before he went to prison for his legal troubles, he fought just before he got sentenced. I don't know if you remember that. I forgot which fight it was, but he literally fought like a month. Was it Pacquiao?
Yeah, they delayed it because it was going to bring approximately $1 billion to the strip.
Yeah, that's what it was. So, yeah, he was able to fight Pacquiao, and then like a month or two later, he got sentenced and did some time. So, and with Showtime, with the whole news that Showtime and Paramount are going to merge, and you know, a lot of restructuring is happening. I'm sure Showtime and Steven Espinosa are trying to prove to their new restructured executive team between Paramount and Showtime that, like, hey, this is, you know, if we can get Davis Garcia, this is going to be great for ratings. You're going to see business-wise, this is a profitable event. That's something that they want to show to Paramount and CBS. So, I don't know, maybe some more leverage is on Golden Boy's side, you know? Because they wanted DAZN to have the rematch rights, and Showtime said no. And then so reportedly that they finally agreed that, okay, if there's a rematch, DAZN gets it or something like that. If Davis loses, if he exercises his rematch clause. So I don't know. We'll see. There's all these things. I personally don't think, and this is just me, I don't think it's going to happen in April, but, you know, we're already less than 2 months away. But I don't think it's going to happen in April, but we'll see. I think Ryan should have fought in January, just like Davis did, but it is what it is. Also, WBC interim junior middleweight champion Sebastian Fondura is returning to the ring on April 8th as part of a main event against Brian Mendoza in California, according to ESPN. So I don't think they've, as of today, they haven't announced the location in California, but I'm sure that'll be announced soon. But There could have been a location. We're just not aware of it. And then this past weekend should have been the return of Adrian the Problem Broner, your favorite fighter and mine, in addition to Jake Paul. February 25th in Atlanta. He was supposed to fight Michael Williams Jr., but Michael Williams Jr., I guess his team had said that his jaw was broken in sparring or in training camp. Something happened. And Michael Williams Jr. was the replacement of the original opponent. And then now Broner's 0-2. And I think I saw a screenshot of like an online post from somebody from BLK Prime, or which I'm assuming, I forgot the name. I'm assuming it was somebody from there that said they were looking for another opponent for Adrian Broner. The purse was $175,000. Your whole team, I think up to five people, hotel expenses, per diem was all paid for, food. And they said they had like a deadline. If we don't get an appointment by 5 p.m. today, which was the other day, might've been Friday, then we can't move on. And it seems like they didn't get it. So they canceled it. And you know, Broner hasn't competed since February of 2021. So 2 years this month. So we'll see. We'll see what happens if they try to make him return. I'm sure Broner's going to be like, well, you need to try to get me return next month. I'm already training. That's what I would say. It's like, you got to put me on. So, I mean, we'll see. Maybe next month in March, they're going to try to put him in a fight. Maybe it won't try to get him somebody. But you know, 0 for 2, Broner and his opponents with BLK Prime. So off to a, after the Crawford fight and all that, BLK Prime isn't off to a good start. So we'll see how that goes. And then like I mentioned earlier, Gervonta Davis pleaded guilty last week to four counts stemming from a hit and run crash in November 2020 that left four people injured, including a pregnant woman. And he's scheduled to be sentenced on May 5th. It does seem, based on what we've been reading and following the case here, that he might do some jail time. It seems like it's likely he'll do some type of jail time. But, you know, how serious are they? Are Al Haymon, Gervonta Davis, and PBC, does this light a fire under them to do the Ryan Garcia fight on April 15th just before he gets sentenced? Yeah, possibly. So we will see. We will see how that goes. But once again, guys, we appreciate it. You guys listening to this week's episode of The Last Round, we apologize for no episode last week, but we are back. We're also going to try to get you some more bonus episodes. We've kind of been lagging on those bonus episodes. So we're going to try to get some more guests that bonus episodes are dedicated to their careers and, you know, kind of diving into specific topics and all that. So we're going to jump into that. But before we end this week's episode of The Last Round, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
At The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to join us next week. We'll be previewing Lewis Ritson, O'Hara Davis from the UK, and Brandon Figueroa against Mark Magasayo.
Oh, nice fight.
A good Showtime card.
Good Showtime card. Solid. Can't wait to talk about that next week. So for once again, from my co-host Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.